The Senate Judiciary Committee to order. My apologies to everybody, we're late. The Senate had a caucus meeting that went over. We're 2:04 on today's Wednesday. Wednesday, whatever day it is. 18th. We have Senator Costello, Senator Schauer, Senator Coghill. We have a quorum. I expect that the other two members will show up briefly, but I'm under a time constraint, so with a quorum, I'm going to go ahead and have CS for Senate Bill 81. And we don't have to have a CS, right? Right. I'm going to have it introduced. I'm going to lay it aside, but my expectation is to deal with it tomorrow. And I think it's a pretty straightforward bill. So, Stacy, you're here with the information. We have you and Margaret Brody, who is here available for questions. Stacy, why don't you put yourself on the record and give us first the reason for the bill, and then we'll just zoom through the sectional.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Stacy Crayley, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. I want to thank you and the committee for hearing Senate Bill 81. Just very briefly, as many of you know, background checks are required as a condition of participation in a number of federal programs, including Medicaid and Title IV-E for foster care. The bill that is before you is a technical amendment and change and correction to existing statutes that have been on the books since 2005. Generally, this bill will improve fairness for applicants without compromising the health, safety, and welfare of individuals who receive services. These background checks are required for anybody who provides services that are paid for in whole or in part by the Department of Health and Social Services, so assisted living home operators, personal care attendants, that sort of individual, foster parents. The bill does three major things. It conforms the criminal history statutes so that there's clear understanding of what constitutes a civil history check. There's a lot of confusion out there that was identified by the Ombudsman's Office in a report from 2013, and we've made those corrections and cleaned up the statute to make sure we know what the civil history check is. It also renames two registries that are currently in statute. That's one of major confusions. There's a registry for child abuse and neglect that's maintained by OCS. And there's this civil history check registry that was maintained by the background check unit. It was very confusing because one was called the central registry, one was called the centralized registry. This bill cleans up that confusion. And finally, the bill makes some edits to the licensing statutes that are found in 4732 to assure that we are meeting the health, safety, and welfare of the recipients who are receiving care in these facilities, like foster homes and assisted living homes, to ensure that information is shared easily and without warrants or search warrants, without court orders or search warrants, and then it also, most importantly, it allows for individuals to be investigated if they abuse or neglect an individual in care, as opposed to focusing solely on the entity. It is a bill that fixes statutes and gaps and overlaps and miscues that are in the existing codified law of the state of Alaska, and we think this bill will help maintain efficiencies and save money and provide better information for the people who we regulate. And with that, I can do a very brief sectional.
So I heard you say that our ombudsman had done some review.
Yes.
Of this and is endorsing these particular changes.
That is correct. The CS that is before you was a collaborative effort with DHSS, the Department of Law, the HES committees in both sides of the in both bodies, as well as the Ombudsman's Office, and they do support this current version.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. For those who are viewing and for my newest member on the committee, the Ombudsman is part of the legislative branch, and so it's a collaborative work. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that. And I want the Senate committee to welcome Senator Wilkowski, and my apologies for having to delay the meeting twice, Senator, and so thank you for showing up. We're on Senate Bill 81, and the Senate Bill 81, we're just going to have them lay up, and I'm going to have Stacy Crayley, who is testifying, go through a sectional, then I'm going to lay the bill aside for tomorrow's committee meeting. Stacy.
Thank you. So very, very brief overview of the sectional, and I can go through each section. I'll just do an overview, which I think is what you would prefer,
right,
Mr. Chairman. So Section 1 is a critical component because it amends Title 12 of the Alaska statutes to confirm and to assure that DHSS is getting criminal history information from the Department of Public Safety in the correct manner. The statute, as it originally drafted, mischaracterized DHSS as a criminal justice agency, and that's inappropriate, so that fixes that mistake.
Just to interrupt you, Senator Kelly, welcome to committee. We're at this point, we're beginning a review of Senate Bill 81. We're on Section 1, going through a sectional. My intention is to just have it introduced, laid aside, and then we're going to go to our forestry bill.
Okay.
So, again, with the quick overview, Section 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, all reframe the civil history database check. And as I mentioned, what's most significant about this is it identifies that we, the Department of Health and Social Services, will not be using its own standalone database. Rather, it will rely upon existing databases to look for civil history backgrounds that are inconsistent with licensure or payment under DHSS. The significant section that outlines that, most of those sections that I just referenced were conforming edits. Section 10 is the big section that does all of this, clarifies that we're looking at health, safety, and welfare when we're looking at civil history checks, clarifies that we're looking for individuals whose children are subject to child need aid petitions, clarifies that we're looking to evaluate, again, health, safety, and welfare issues when looking at occupational licensing individuals who receive payment from the Department of Health and Social Services. And it also adds that an individual who works for the state of Alaska who has an offense that is in, related to assaultive, neglectful, or exploitive behavior cannot work for the state of Alaska. So it's broader than just DHSS. It goes to all agencies. Section 11 amends current immunity statutes to reflect changes to civil history database checks. And Section 12, which is a significant change.
On the civil part, Senator Wilkowski has a question on that.
On Section 10, I went through that real quick if I could. So does that, it says, I'm looking at page 6, lines 23 through, well, it goes on, but the department shall, by regulation, identify each database the department will review when conducting a civil history check. And is this limited to Alaska databases, or is this nationwide databases? Or will you look at specific other state databases? What's the intent there?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's not limited to state databases. We do look, one of the primary databases we review is the Office of Inspector General database for Medicare and Medicaid exclusions and fraud, to ensure that individuals who are on that list are not able to participate in the state Medicaid program.
Senator Wilkowski.
And so if someone has committed something and on a database it's on a database that you have not identified, would you be able to use that if it's brought to your attention? Would you be able to use that to deny someone's employment or something?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, currently the databases that we review are outlined in state regulation, and I believe that in order to, if a new database was to come to our attention that could be used for this purpose, we would need to amend the regulation in order to rely upon that database to identify a barring condition.
Please continue.
Section 12 establishes a variance, beefs up the variance section of the current statutes to make sure that individuals who seek variance have access to all of the necessary information to pursue that variance. Section 13, 14, and 15 all deal with the information sharing for the variances. And Section 15 changes the Office of Children's Services Registry to a Child Protection Registry to, again, avoid the confusion that I previously mentioned about the current names in statute. Section 16 is a new subsection that clarifies and clarifies the position that if somebody is going to be identified in a civil history database, they must be afforded notice and an opportunity to challenge that finding, and all of the provisions of due process would apply before an individual would be barred from that, based upon that finding. Section 17 is a conforming edit to change names for the registries that are being amended here. Section 18 allows the department to look at prior adverse licensing findings as a portion of a about whether or not to place a condition on a license. This is an amendment to 4732. Section 19 is an important section. This is the one where if an individual who works for a licensed entity abuses or neglects an individual, they can be individually investigated and notified of the allegation. They will be afforded due process, but as the current statute exists, if an individual works for a provider and abuses or neglects a resident, the only person who can be investigated is the entity, not the individual. So this cleans up a big gap in the current statute. Section 20, 21 are technical fixes about the civil database and when hearings are required. Section 22 adds a section that allows for concurrent sharing of information with law enforcement if there is a concurrent criminal investigation with a licensing investigation. Section 23 is another important one. It allows all entities or divisions within the department who do the licensing functions to be able to share information without, as a matter of law, as a matter of operation of law, without the barriers of confidentiality. Section 24 repeals references in the current law that are no longer necessary. Section 25 is an applicability section for the criminal and civil background checks. And Section 25 is a reviser note, and Section 27 provides for an effective immediate date, an immediate effective date.
Question, Senator Costello.
Thank you, Stacey. My question is just about the effective date and if there's background checks needed for those individuals who may not have them right now. Do you see a transition period that might be a little problematic?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, no, we don't. This process all exists as we have it right now. All this does is clean up the existing statute, so there will be no transitional issues with individuals who are either in the queue, if you will, or who will come in before the effective date.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Section 15 on page 10 requires the department to maintain a child protection registry. Is there a time limit on how long that information must be kept?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the Child Protection Registry or database is the ORCA database that's maintained by the Office of Children's Services, and that registry is required by federal law, and it maintains information in there, under public records for a very long time due to the ages of individuals. So I think that information is almost kept in perpetuity.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is the information in this section, in that registry, discoverable under a Freedom of Information Act search?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no, it is not.
Senator Wilkowski and Stacey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay the bill aside, but if there are further questions, I would like for them to serve us tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I know since we're at the close of our session, we're actually overtime. We're trying to let some of these things through that are important for good state operations. So Senator Wilkowski and any member of the committee, my intention is to bring this up tomorrow for further questions. In going through it in my office, I was convinced by the administration and the ombudsman's report that this is something worth doing, so I figured I'd bring it up. So, Stacey, thank you very much. We're going to lay 81 aside until tomorrow's meeting, which, by the way, is at 9 o'clock in the morning. Hopefully we'll actually have more time than our regular meeting today. Thank you very much to the administration. What I'm going to do is bring up House Bill 355 right now. There is a CS, by the way, and I want to bring the CS before us, and it's the U version, right? Right, and why don't I get, let's see, I need Aliana to come up, and Aliana, you're the staff to Representative Guttenberg, and What I'm going to do is make a motion to adopt it. I'm going to object, and then we'll have you go through what those changes are at this point, and then we can begin the discussion with further further conversations on amendments or whatever. So, Senator Costello, would you make a motion to adopt the U version?
Sure. I move Senate CS for House Bill 355 Judiciary Version Uniform for the committee as the working document.
And I'll object so that we can have Aliotta from staff to Representative Guttenberg give us the changes in this.
For the record, Aliotta Salungit. In this committee's substitute, the change is found in Section H, page 3, line 11. It is updated to read, during the fire season or burn closure or restriction established under AS 4115050, a person may not discard any lighted tobacco, cigar, cigarette, match, firecracker, or other burning material on forested land. This is a conforming change that makes Section 8 of the bill consistent with Section 5, where it speaks of fire season.
Okay. Is this the one that was brought up by Senator Wilkowski?
Yes.
Good catch.
Do you have a question for?
Sure. Let's. Chris Mays is here, so why don't we have him come to the table and Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And I know this section deals with forestry. Is there other laws that would be in place, like littering laws, for example, that would prohibit someone during any season from throwing tobacco or cigars or cigarettes or things like that?
For the record, my name is Chris Mace, Director of the Division of Forestry, through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski. I am not aware of any laws that my agency would enforce, but there could be local littering laws or other laws that would prevent people from discarding trash or other perishables. This section, it conforms with the purpose of the section, which is fire protection.
Satisfied, Senator?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Any other questions on the CS? That was just a good catch by a question that we had in committee the other day. And we do have some amendments, so I'm going to remove my objection to have the U version brought before us. And with that, we do have some amendments that did not contemplate this version. So if any of them get adopted, we'll make a motion to have those conform to this version. But at this point, because of the time of our meeting and the other business we have, I'm going to try to keep things going. But I will say this. I've got some people on that wanted to testify. I got D.D. Johnro in Willow, and I've got Jeff Tucker in Kenai who want to give testimony. And what I'd like to do is ask them if either one of them have a time frame question, problem. If we can go through the amendments, and if they'd rather hear the amendments, which I think would be wise, before they gave their testimony, maybe they would change their testimony. Dee, you're online. Do you have a time constraint for testimony? You might be on mute. She just dropped off. Oh, I'm sorry. That was I was hoping that wouldn't be the case, so I'm sorry. How about Jeff Tuck with the Fire Chiefs Association, Kenai? Jeff, are you under time constraint?
Can you hear me? I'm actually in a cab in D.C. right now, actually an Uber. So I'd like to just make a quick testimony. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association
please do.
Supports this bill. Can you hear me, Senator?
Very well. Please give us your testimony. Thank you.
Sure. Just real brief, because I know you're on time frame. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the fire chief of the City of Kenai Fire Department and president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. We support House Bill 355. We feel it will provide our friends in forestry the prevention tools that will enable them to better provide their job, to be able to provide their services. I'm encouraged and hope the amendments will also do the same to the bill, and I'll just keep my testimony brief today.
Thank you for calling in, Jeff, and it's good to hear your voice, and thank you for your work. Well, hopefully we can get this thing across the finish line. Thank you very much.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Senator.
So is Dee Dee back on yet? Do you know? Okay. All right. I'll have to send her apology on that. All right. With that, I asked if both the sponsor and Mr. Mace could stay here to help us answer some of these amendments, because I have not seen them yet. And so at this point, Senator Schauer.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 016.
I'm going to object.
Okay. Try to keep it quick. I know you want to keep this fast. So on page 2, line 16, looking at the word investigating, and generally just because you want it in the interest of time, most of these deal with what I believe to be too broad of enforcement powers, or broad and vague interpretation of what they might be able to do with that enforcement ability. So I'm trying to pull that back just a little bit. So investigating, if you look at the title of Section 3, it's right of entry to control and suppress fires. We have preventing investigating, which, again, one, doesn't seem to be applicable to the title. I suggested Mr. Mace yesterday, perhaps if we're going to go down the preventing and investigating, it would need its own separate paragraph to deal with that, those powers. And then secondly, on page 4, essentially the same argument, investigate, failure to assist preventing or suppressing fires. We have the same investigate word, which I don't think needs to be in either one of these, as far as it doesn't limit their ability. They've already been doing that, but I think investigating takes it a little too far in the other direction of where they might be able to go with that authority. So that's why I propose this amendment, to just delete those two words and those two sections.
Comment from the anybody on the committee? What I can do is get some comment from the sponsor. From the sponsor, and if you want to defer to Mr. Mace, that's fine.
Through the chair, these amendments were moved in this committee in the previous body, and they didn't garner enough support to be included in this legislation, so we do oppose the amendment.
All right. So I'll take that. Do you want to bring it to a vote?
Okay, Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Mace?
Yes, we can ask Mr. Mace.
Forestry, why do you need the ability to investigate? Is that something that should be done by maybe not your division, and maybe by law enforcement authorities? Or?
Yep, for the record, my name's Chris Mace, Director of the Division. Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, our FPOs are specifically trained in cause and determination of wildland fires, where other state agencies do not typically have that type of expertise. Investigating, as we've talked about before, is important for when we have smoke reports, for our officers to investigate a potential fire and determine if there is a fire or not. If it's after an emergency situation, all their due right processes are maintained, their constitutional rights, and we would use warrants to do a more detailed investigation of cause and determination.
Question?
No. No further.
Do you have an Eddie?
I have to have an Eddie's. So, you want to maintain the amendment? I can call a roll.
Yes, that's how it works.
Yeah, we can. Okay. We can call a roll.
Please.
So, call a roll. Senate Secretary.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Schauer.
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski.
No.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
No.
Two yeas, three nays.
All right, so amendment number 1, which is dot 16, fails. Another amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment 017.
017, we'll call that number 2.
Yes, sir.
And, okay, explain the amendment to us.
Page 2, lines 14, 15.
I'll object, by the way.
Sorry, that's my point. Lines 14 and 15, right of entry to control and suppress fires as Section 3, the title. And it's the same argument as I had last time without going too far in depth. When responding to a wildland fire, suspected wildland fire, or administering the provisions of this chapter, again, the same thing that I think we're going very far too broad in the powers that we're granting when we're talking about a paragraph that is strictly about right of entry to control and suppress fires. I think this needs to be in a separate section written in a different way. And that's it in a nutshell.
To the sponsor.
Senator Coghill, we oppose this amendment would actually make it more restrictive and leave it so that permits could only be issued for setting fires and use of burning devices. I believe Mr. Mace could explain it a little better.
Okay. Chris Mace, why don't you go ahead and give us an explanation to this?
Yes, thank you again. Chris Mache, Division of Forestry. Yes, this would be more restrictive to us and would limit our rights potentially to enter during an emergency and perform the duties that this section of the statute authorizes to do, which is to suppress and control wildland fire.
So, Senator Schauer, is that your intent, is to make it more restrictive?
I don't believe it is, Mr. Chairman, and the discussion we had yesterday, because I had the bill sponsor and Mr. Mache in the office. The way I see that for this chapter and how it's described, I believe that actually makes it less restrictive from my viewpoint, because it doesn't respond to the – we're not stopping them from doing what they already do in the chapter, which is to respond to wildland fires or suspected wildland fires and their right to control and suppress.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
yes.
One of the sections there talks about other activities of land, and there's other types of land uses that could cause fires, which are timber harvesting, land clearing operations, and it would prevent our ability to fully work under those scenarios.
Okay, well, I'm going to maintain my objection. Any other discussion, Senator Willikowski?
I'm not trying to delay. I'm just trying to understand what other provisions of this chapter. Can you give me some more examples of why you need this?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, other provisions of the chapter could be the section that refers to destructive agents. We had a discussion on that yesterday, which could be insect infestations or other, which is defined again in the current statutes. And I do have a cite for you under the Forest Practices Act that outlines the rest of the process of how the commissioner would identify a zone of infestation and deal with the insect part of that, which falls under destructive agents. It's actually found under the Forest Resources and Practices Act at Section 4117.082, which is the section that deals with control of infestations and disease. And if you look down at subsection D, it gives a specific process that the commissioner must use to establish that zone and then take action on that type of a scenario. So this would restrict our authority to do just that.
Further discussion on amendment number 2? No. Call the question.
Senator Schauer?
Yes.
Senator Willikowski?
No.
Senator Kelly?
No.
Senator Costello?
No.
Senator Coghill?
No.
Yay,
so amendment number 2 fails to pass. That'll bring us to the next amendment. Senator Schauer, what's the number?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 018.
018, we'll call it amendment number 3.
Correct.
All right. I'll object.
Okay, amendment number 3, delete all material on page 3, lines 7 and 9, and add a person may not set fires or use burning device without permit as prescribed by the commissioner and regulation. That replaces a person may not set fires, use burning devices, or conduct other activities or use land that increases fire danger without a permit as prescribed by the commissioner and regulation. And what I have a problem with, what I'm trying to change, is if you read the sentence, it says, or conduct other activities or use land that increases fire danger without a permit. Permits already required in the cases that we have here, including during the fire season. I have the same objection to the or conduct other activities or use of land. That seems far too broad to me to be in that sentence for what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and Senator Costello, you have a question?
Yes, I don't know who it's for, though. My question is, does the phrase conduct other activities, is that balanced out by without a permit as prescribed? Because I could see the point of the amendment sponsor. I mean, what comes to mind is somebody would now need a permit to smoke a cigarette. And then I'm wondering if that's not as prescribed through the permitting process, I'm wondering if taking this out has that no effect, or keeping it in really doesn't change anything.
Maybe Chris Mache can answer that.
Yes, Chris Mache, Director, Division of Forestry. We would oppose this. We think that the language needs to stand as is. To answer your question, other activities are typically other types of land uses. As I mentioned earlier, timber harvest is one of those land uses. Land clearing for development purposes could be a use. and during the fire season, a permit would be required because of the high risk of potentially sparking a wildfire in that scenario. So I don't believe, well, this would not restrict other types of scenarios, such as you described, like smoking a cigarette.
Senator Costello, satisfied?
Yeah.
Senator Wilkowski?
You gave an example yesterday of people mowing their lawns and starting fires when they hit rocks, sparking. Would that be an example of another activity that could increase fire danger?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it could be, yes, anything that would create a fire. So similar example with the timber harvesting. We had a hot saw that's basically a big lawnmower, but it's for trees. It hit a rock and sparked and started a large forest fire.
So, just on the Section 7, where does it apply? To which lands does it apply, and to what times of year does it apply?
Through the chair, Senator, during the fire season would be the times of year, or other times the commissioner prescribed for the earlier section.
And where is this forested lands? So
yes, also by forested lands. So that definition, as you recall, is quite broad, which would include lawns.
So you can't mow your lawn without a permit?
No, you can certainly mow your lawn without a permit, but if you cause a fire to occur, you could be cited for that.
Okay. How about if I could,
Senator Wilkowski,
about using a firearm on a outside?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, anything that would actually start fire could be considered under the statutes as they are written. The purpose is to have a fairly broad statute so that we can prevent the risk to public safety that occurs from these different types of ignition devices. You do not need a permit to use a firearm, but if you started a fire.
According to this, you do. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support the amendment. I think this is, I understand the intent. I think it's just extremely overbroad at this point. So in the absence of narrowing it down, I'll support the amendment.
Can we have an Eddies?
Sure. Have an Eddies. Question to the amendment. I understand it narrows it down. But it's also my understanding that this would only be used, the broader language would be used under a time where fire danger would be imminent, right? And so I think that I'm okay with that. Further discussion?
Just on that, my understanding of what I'm voting on, I asked Mr. Mache the time of year that this would apply, and the time of year would be during the fire season, which is defined as being from April till September, I believe.
Through the chair, Senator, through the end of August, we have the ability to extend.
And then the location would be to all forested areas, forested land, which has been defined as basically anything that has any vegetation on it, is my understanding, including your backyard. So I understand the intent. I'm sympathetic. I just think the language is overbroad.
Further discussion on it? All right. Call a roll.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator Costello.
Pass.
Senator Schauer?
Yes.
Senator Costello?
No.
Senator Coghill?
No.
3 yeas, 2 nays.
So with 3 yeas and 2 nays, amendment number 3 passes. Next amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment 019.
019. I'll object. We'll call that number 4.
Go to page 6, following line 16. Section 21, AS 4115-950 would be amended to add this new subsection C. A person is not required under this section to disclose a deadly weapon under AS 1161-220A1A to a peace officer described under A1 of this section. And I will refer to the little orange book because it comes out of 4115-950, and it is number 1. Solely for the purpose of enforcing this chapter, well, I apologize, I'll read the whole thing and make more sense. The following persons are peace officers of the state, and they shall enforce the provisions of this chapter and the regulations adopted in this chapter. Solely for the purpose of enforcing this chapter, an employee of the department or other person authorized by the commissioner. The second one would be a police officer of the state, an actual peace officer. Mr. Chairman, my reason for this is that if you look at this right now, and I asked the question speaking to them yesterday, was that what the firemen are not trained to handle this as a law enforcement officer. So you have the situation where somebody would say go out to investigate or to talk to a homeowner down a, you know, it's got a privacy sign, don't trespass, and they deal with them and they've got a weapon, and that, of course, happens a lot in, off our road system. So my concern is that if it's interpreted incorrectly, you will have a fireman that might broadly see this as his ability to enforce this, and you're going to see a confrontation. So making it clear that we don't have to do that if a fireman comes up and is not an actual peace officer, it keeps us from people having to declare that and then getting into that confrontational state between a non-peace officer and an actual citizen that's armed.
For the sponsor, have you seen this amendment as well?
Yes. Yes, I believe Ann Nelson can speak to it.
Who?
Ann Nelson. She is with the Department of Law.
All right. Why don't we have Ann Nelson come on up? Pull a chair up, Ann. Put yourself on the record. We'll deal with this amendment.
I'm Ann Nelson with the Alaska Department of Law, and I'm actually going to punt this question to Assistant District Attorney Aaron Peterson, who's on the line.
Aaron is online. Aaron, go ahead and put yourself on the record. And have you heard the discussion?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chairman. So,
put yourself on the record, Aaron, and then go ahead and give the answer.
All right. So, my name is Aaron Peterson with the Alaska Department of Law Criminal Division. The way that this statute would work in practice, quite frankly, a fireman dressed as they are, and I think the committee's probably aware, they wear, you know, lime green uniforms, they don't have badges, they don't have guns. Those are, you know, there's a reasonable requirement. There's a requirement that the person who is, you know, knowingly possessing a concealed firearm be reckless, that the person that has contacted them is a peace officer. So under these circumstances, they wouldn't be committing the crime if they didn't disclose to a peace officer, as the bill is already written. And that's because, you know, it wouldn't be reckless to not know that a firefighter wearing all lime green is a peace officer. So that's kind of how it stands now.
Questions? Senator Wilkowski?
So Section 1161-220A1A, I believe, is the section that is an affirmative duty to disclose to a police officer that you have a firearm, so you're pulled over. And is that the section that we're referring to? Because I don't have that section in front of me.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so
if I could please, Senator Wilkowski.
So if I understand this what this law is simply, what this amendment is doing is clarifying that you don't have an affirmative duty to say to a peace officer that you have a firearm in your possession. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that does appear to be what the amendment would accomplish. And to the extent that it's necessary, obviously that's up to this committee, but I was trying to point out that the way that 1161-220 is written, for somebody to be charged with that, there has to be probable cause that they committed the offense, and of course that means that they knowingly possessed a concealed firearm on their person and were reckless as to the fact that they were contacted by a peace officer and didn't disclose it. So the circumstance is being contacted by a peace officer, and under the circumstances that is contemplated by this bill overall is an FPO wearing, you know, the FPO uniform, which does not appear to be a peace officer uniform. You know, they wouldn't have that duty to disclose in the first place, or at least as their uniforms are currently constructed, they wouldn't. Now if they have a badge and a gun, that might change the analysis. So as far as the legal analysis goes, that's where we stand now. This amendment would codify that they would never have to disclose, even if the FPO was, dressed as a peace officer, and you know, there were changes made later on if that were something that were to happen. But
let's go ahead and finish up the debate on four. Senator Wilkowski, Senator Schauer had an input on that, and then I'll go back to you.
Just wanted to clarify with the previous commenter that if you read 4159.50, however, based on what you're saying, not everybody can be assumed to understand that a figure of authority, regardless of how they're dressed, shows up in their property, starts to demand or, you know, insist on certain actions. And it says in Provision A of that the following persons are peace officers of the state, and they shall enforce the provisions of this chapter and regulations adopted under this chapter. And the very first one talks about any person that is designated by the department or the commissioner. So you are putting that person into a position of authority, and it does define it as a peace officer. That's what we were trying to clarify, just to be clear.
Comment on that, Mr. Peterson?
No, I understand.
All right.
Through the chair, I understand that that's what the intent of the amendment is. And
all right. So, Senator Wilkowski,
that's obviously a
further question.
No, that touched on my. That was my question of who is defined as a peace officer, and under 4159.50A, it does appear to be fairly broad.
Thank you. And through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there's numerous definitions of peace officers throughout the Alaska statutes, and so that question could actually lead to a whole other analysis that would be take up more time than we have here. But certainly the definition of peace officer in Title 41 is for the purposes of enforcing Title 41.
All right. Well, we've taken up quite a bit of time on this amendment. Okay, amendment number 4 was withdrawn. And probably at this point what I'll do, we got two other amendments, and I'm running out of time. I wanted to have the time, so I'm going to lay this bill aside. And we're going to have to take up one other bill before we get out of here. And so we'll come back and pick it up right at this amendment tomorrow, because we took nearly 30 minutes on that in 1 hour's meeting where we had four other bills. So my apologies to everybody. But I wanted to give the House Bill 170 one last chance to come before us and answer questions. This is a rather large bill. And please come on forward, Crystal. And my apologies. This is kind of the problem of the end of session, that we get bunched up like an accordion. And it's my apologies. I didn't expect that many amendments and that much time. So what I wanted to do is there was a couple of questions yesterday, but is there any further questions that I need to have on the table for this particular bill that is rather large, actually, but I've had the privilege of looking at this law previously. This is the Securities Registration and Transactions Bill. I've had the privilege of looking at it before. 170. My apologies. This is this Securities and Transactions. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding is this is a bill that's come before this committee in years past. Is it is it the same, or has it changed in any significant way? Do you if you know?
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Kito. To answer your question, Senator Wilkowski, this bill has been around since 2010. The Department of Commerce has been, in my stint over there, it was a bill that was important to former Director Kevin Anselm and her predecessor before that. And so, yes, this is something that's been kicking around 2 years ago, end game. Again,
right.
It's a 111-page bill. It's a lot of work. Once we get into this time of session, there's a lot of attention being drawn elsewhere. So this is
and Senator Wilkowski,
many sessions of work.
And I'll just add to that, I've been in the legislature when it has got caught up in the end game every single time, and here we are again. And a lot of it is because it's so dense.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a real problem for a bill such as this when you do something as large as this. The industry has had significant input into it. I still have Christine Naylor, who is the Division of Banking and Securities in Anchorage, who's wanting to testify, so I'm going to let her say a few more words before we run out of time. So, Christy, you wanted to speak to this, maybe a little more to the history and a little more to the substance, if you're there.
Yes. For the record, this is Christy Naylor with the Division of Banking and Securities. I'm the acting director. Senator Coghill, thank you for the opportunity again. I don't want to take up too much time. I think that we've talked about a lot of this. Like I mentioned yesterday, this really is a consumer protection bill, and the main focuses of what we're fixing in our current Securities Act that are lacking is putting in some new and enhanced administrative, civil, and criminal penalties, and more consumer protections and consumer education efforts. That we're hoping that will really benefit Alaskans as a whole. And it is a large bill, as you mentioned, but that's because we're doing a complete repeal and reenactment. And as I noted before, primarily most of the existing Securities Act kind of remains in place, but there's renumbering and reorganization and things like that. So it looks bigger than it really is. So I'm happy to answer questions if you'd like, but I think that's all.
I think one piece of confusing history is that it got pulled from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act because of where it was situated in our law. Can you give just a brief history on that?
Sure. So, yes, Chair Coghill. So the as you all are aware, the ANCSA is unique to Alaska, and there's a directive from the federal government that the ANCSA Corporation's proxy solicitations should be regulated in a similar fashion to the way that the SEC regulates publicly traded corporations' proxy solicitations. And for that reason, when that was all passed, it was placed into the Securities Act, which sort of makes sense because of securities is a giant umbrella. But when you think about it, Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act corporations are so unique, and the proxy solicitation regulation is so individualized to that industry alone, it doesn't make sense to regulate them and have the same enforcement procedures that we would have for broker-dealers and investment advisors and people that are committing financial fraud against the Alaskans. So it makes more sense to leave the ANCSA provisions where they are. They're familiar with their provisions, and the corporations, I think, would like to keep them where they're at and unchanged. And so we'll move all the security provisions to another chapter and have them regulated separately, which makes a lot more sense.
That was a wrinkle that when I first saw it, I thought, I wonder why. And so I just wanted to give some of that history to the legislators. It's my intention to bring it to a vote. I know that it's some of it is based on the fact that we're taking public testimony as trust. I have looked through the bill previously. I've perused it this time, and I've gotten for myself a document that allows me to look at some of the unique provisions that are outside of the Uniform Code, and I'd be glad to share that with some of the members. But it was for my own benefit, and I will... for me to understand it. I'm comfortable with it. Is there any objection to...
Can I just ask a
yes,
question?
Yes, sir, you may. Absolutely. That's why we have this time. Senator Wilkowski.
Is there any opposition to the bill that you know of?
For the record, Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Keto. Senator Wilkowski, no. None that I have that we've heard through any of the prior committee hearings.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crystal. This is the R version.
Yes, sir.
And most of that is drafting to make it conform. So I'd like to bring it up for a motion, and we'll see what the will of the committee is. It's version R, Senator Costello.
I move Senate CS for CS for House Bill Number 170, Labor and Commerce, version Romeo, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the Senate bill, the CS for Senate Bill 170, Labor and Commerce, from committee? Seeing no objection, we'll do that. We'll move 170 from committee. I'm going to take a brief ease while we sign this, and I'm going to ask the committee the next issue. All right. We'll call the committee back to order. So while we're at ease, I was discussing what we have before us, and I have quite a few amendments on the trust bill yet, and I have like 7 minutes or 10 minutes really to do that, so I just really don't have the time to do that justice today. So for everybody that's online, we have people from all over calling in to testify in House Bill 209. We have David Sheftel, Abigail O'Connor, Matthew Blotmacher, Jamie Dahlman, Carl Kaufman, Susan Foley, and then we have in the room Delina Johnson, Andrew Evans, and Ann Nelson, who was with the Department of Law. I only can say if I hadn't come here a half an hour late and had to leave, I just can't do justice. As you can see, even the one bill that we said they were going to do quick amendments, it took us over a half an hour to deal with them. So, and then I have a lot more amendments on the trust bill. So tomorrow we'll bring up House Bill 355, which would be the first thing. That'll be the forestry bill. We'll deal with those amendments. We'll bring up the trust bill, 208, Senate Bill 81, which we had introduced to us today, which I think will probably be less controversial. And then House Bill 123, which I do have some controversy with. And but my expectation is we'll just lay that on the table tomorrow and deal with it Friday. And so those are the issues in front of us. And since it is the expectation from my leadership that I shut my committee down Friday, those are going to be the pieces of work. I don't anticipate any new pieces of work unless I am put in a position where my arm gets twisted. So thank you. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning we'll be in this room. I know that everybody's schedule is tough, but we can go from 9 to 10:30, I think. All right?
Is there public testimony on 208 tomorrow, Mr. Chairman?
I'll have I've invited them to come to the testify for that. So I thought we were going to have time to do that today. 208, the trust bill. And I've been trying to get some agreement on the trust bill for a good long while, and it looks like we're just going to have some tension in committee. We want to deal with it. I just want to deal with it in a right amount of time, a proper. I want to give people a chance to make their case, which I just can't do today, and my apologies for that. So with that, we're adjourned, and we'll be to here at 9 o'clock in the morning. Thank you. We're adjourned.